Thank you, everybody, for joining the Citizens Climate University talk on growth in your state or region, conducting outreach tours. This is specifically about a lot of the tours that you may have heard about around the country, where we're trying to outreach into places where we don't yet have chapters or we need to help chapters grow. We have several speakers tonight to talk about their experiences around the country. Peter Brin. My background, I'm going to go through. We have a pretty deep deck of presenters tonight, so deep bench. So I'm going to read through everybody's bios. My name is Peter Brin. I have a background in marine engineering and naval architecture. I was with ExxonMobil for about 8 years. I've been with CCL for about 5 years now, and I've worn a lot of hats with CCL, most recently as the conservative director on staff. However, I'm transitioning back right now into a volunteer, as my girlfriend and I are planning to travel all next year, so we're taking a year off. Relevant for tonight's talk, I've been involved in two tours, one around Texas and one around the Southeast, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. I'm going to speak about those experiences on tonight's call. We also have Donna Dew with us. He's a native of North Carolina and a graduate of Appalachian State University with a degree in ecology and environmental biology. He spent the last decade or so advocating for renewable energy and action on climate change. Don founded the first CCL chapter in North Carolina about 6 years ago and is currently the Southeast Director, managing over 40 active groups in Carolinas, Virginia, West Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. Don's primary focus is grassroots organizing along with direct congressional lobbying on the federal level. Henry Slack, joining us from Georgia. He is a mechanical engineer with experience in the federal government and indoor air programs and outreach. He's the distinguished lecturer for ASHRAE, the engineering organization. He's the CCL Atlanta chapter co-leader since 2014, the Georgia State co-coordinator since 2015, and he co-led the Georgia Energy Freedom Tour in April of last year, 2016. We also have Susan Ludwig from Colorado. She's the Colorado CCL State co-coordinator. She's worked with human services programs across the state for decades and now is volunteering with CCL. She is the team captain for the upcoming Colorado tour later this year. And finally, many of you know Bill Barron. He's a father and carpenter by trade. He lives in Salt Lake City and founded that chapter in 2010. He has since been the CCL Wild West regional coordinator since 2013. Supporting volunteers in Montana, Wyoming, Utah, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and Nevada. Bill has run for U.S. Senate in both 2012 and 16, and for U.S. Congress in 2014 as an unaffiliated single-issue climate candidate. And that is the list of presenters, but as I mentioned at the top of the call, I apologize. I'm going to be the one doing most of the speaking, at least for the first half, so bear with me. For tonight's calls, our learning goals are first to understand the purpose and primary goals of a tour. Also to determine whether and what type of tour might make sense in your region. Learn best practices and identify the tools and support that is available for you to conduct your tour. So the agenda, I'm gonna start off, as I mentioned, with the kind of the whys and how-tos of conducting a tour. Then we're gonna go to Colorado, which is sort of a tour in progress being planned. We'll hear the Kentucky story, the Georgia story, some stories from the Wild West from Bill. And then we're gonna break out into some breakout sessions at the end. I'm sure most of you are thinking about conducting a tour and might wanna ask some questions one-on-one with some of the folks who are gonna be speaking tonight. So we're gonna break out at the end for that. So why conduct a tour? Obviously, to pass carbon fee and dividend, CCL seeks to have some presence in every congressional district and a strong presence in strategically critical districts. Now, I'll leave it to you to decide what's strategically critical, but once you've identified that, we want to create a sustained local effort in all those locations. If we have no volunteers in that location, we want to identify new ones and ideally kick off a chapter. If you have a fledgling chapter somewhere, this might be an opportunity to go there and help them get restarted. Now, there's a lot of other cool stuff you can do with a tour. You can meet with endorsers, generate constituent letters, meet with MOC offices. But at the end of the day, it's really that sustained local effort that we're looking to achieve. Now, what might a tour look like? We did this Texas tour in October 2015. Larry, who's on the call tonight, joined us for about a week of that tour. We did a lot of great stuff in that tour. We had about 24 public presentations. We met with congressional district offices, chambers of commerce, farm bureaus, mayors, newspapers, et cetera. But at the end of the day, the question I had was, did we really create a sustained local effort in all those places we went? So let's look at that and analyze that. So we visited about 25 cities, and of those at the end of the tour, about a third of those cities, or about a quarter of those cities, eight of them, we thought we had the beginnings of a group. Ultimately, only three were actually sustained. That was about a 12% success rate, not quite as high as we had hoped. There were a lot of other ways to measure success in that tour, but on that measure, it wasn't quite as high as we would have liked. Now, on the southern tour that we did a year later, we went to 22 cities, a little bit shorter. We had, coming out of that tour, 17 potential chapters, of which about 12 of those sustained to this very day. And that was an increase in our success rate from 12 to 55%. Now, that wasn't an accident. Perhaps it was perhaps our success was somewhat accidental, but the reason for it was not accidental. And the reason was that we engaged local volunteers from the start. Whether that was intended or not, we just did a much better job of that on the second tour. And that's going to be a big focus. That was a big learning for us that we're going to focus on in tonight's presentation. So what I'm going to present here is sort of how to conduct a tour and show a sort of a scalable toolkit that you can use around the country, wherever you might be thinking of doing this. Now, I've broken this up into seven parts: an overview and getting started, finding volunteers, scheduling your event, promoting your event, execution, follow-up, and we'll talk about budget as well. So the first step, getting started, kind of an overview. Tours start from all different places. They start as a concept, sometimes just in somebody's mind, or they've come out of regional planning conferences where you have 10 people brainstorming, and this is what they decide they want to do. Usually when a tour starts, you'll have what I'll call the tour captain and beginnings of a planning committee, usually 2 to 4 people, and that will be sort of your key planning team of folks who will keep the project going. You also want to involve your regional coordinator early. Your RC is going to know the region and where you need to grow, and they're also going to be the best person to engage potential new group leaders that you identify as the tour planning begins. When to start? So if you're planning a smaller tour, less than 10 cities, 2 to 3 months out is probably okay. For a bigger tour of more than 10 cities, you're probably going to want to start 3 to 4 months out. Obviously, it takes longer to get everybody organized. There's a lot of cat herding, as you might expect, in an effort like this. So you're going to want to be able to have a little more time for that. Where to go? Now, you probably have a good sense of where you already need to go, but here are some thoughts on that. One is need-based. Where do you need to go? Where do you not have a chapter yet? Where do you have a struggling chapter that could use some help? Be opportunistic. You might have a cluster of volunteers somewhere, and this is an opportunity to organize a chapter just because you have a lot of people there already. And we'll talk more in a minute about how to identify those folks. Also, be strategic. Look for population centers and look for where the MOC already has an office. So the member of Congress, if they have offices in 3 locations, it's a pretty good chance that those are the locations where most of the people are, where most of the activity is in that district. And then once you figure that out, set the itinerary and try to set it early, because you really want to set the tour's vision from the start so that your team can begin planning. Okay, so tour activities. What do you actually do on the tour? Now, of course, you can do whatever you like, but this is what most groups have done. We really focus on the public presentation as kind of the galvanizing key event. This is where we can identify group leaders and volunteers in that setting and also generate media interest. We also like to do lobby and endorser meetings along the way. That helps to empower local volunteers. So if you're going to go do some meetings during the day, you can invite those local volunteers to come along and kind of show them how a lobbying meeting usually goes. You can educate local leaders. And also, if you're getting a chapter started in that location, this is an opportunity to kind of kickstart that relationship for that chapter between the volunteers and a local chamber of commerce or whomever else. Also, if you can incorporate any group start workshops or regional conferences in the tour, that's just icing on the cake. A typical day of the tour usually looks like, if it's a weekday, usually during the day we'll meet with endorsers, and in the evening we'll have our presentation. If it's a weekend, it's a little more relaxed schedule. We'll have usually a public presentation, maybe in the early afternoon, and if we can get an endorser meeting in over lunch or something, we'll do that too. But it's usually more relaxed on the weekend. You also want to create and communicate your tour's vision right from the start. So you want to give it a good brand, a good name. A lot of people have used the Energy Freedom name. The Alaska folks called it the Alaska Big Dividend Tour. So create a name, create a brand. Like I said, set your itinerary and firm up the dates. And then create a flyer and use that flyer to really communicate the vision. What's the tour all about? What is the What are the dates? Who's going? Why are we going? What are we trying to achieve? Get all that into the flyer in a concise way. The other thing you're going to want to do is set up a planning website. Now, these slides will be available after the fact, of course. And we have one example in here for the Texas 23 tour, which is an upcoming tour we're working on right now. Set up a planning website, and with that website, it's going to become a hub for your team with all the information and tools that they need. I found that Google Sites is a great platform to use for this, especially the new Google Sites. It's easy to use. It's aesthetically appealing. It's a pretty good tool. And I have structured this latest site on kind of a step-by-step format. In fact, the reason that we're on step zero right now of overview, I'm trying to align it with the website, which is why I've done it this way. So as you see us going through the rest of this presentation, you'll see that planning website button at the top, and that'll be where I show excerpts of our planning website to kind of share some of the information we're going through in this presentation. So here's the first example of that. So this is our planning website for this upcoming Texas 23 tour. It talks about what's the opportunity, has the planning call agendas, has the itinerary, talks about a typical day of the tour, et cetera. This is really geared toward our planning teams that can come in here and look at this and get an understanding of what the tour is all about. All right, so step one, find volunteers. Now, let's define a few roles before we jump into this. So we've got what we call the planning committee. We talked about that a minute ago. This is your tour captain and other leaders. You also are going to have what we call host committees. So every tour of the stop, you want a dedicated team. And a team could just be one person. It doesn't have to be a lot of people. But you want a team planning every day of the tour. And you want to create ownership in that team for that day. And so we call those the hosts or the host committees. So you want one host or host committee per tour stop. And you really, again, you want to empower them to have full control over that day, to say, we're going to show up at 8 in the morning. We're going to leave at 8 or 9 at night. You control everything that happens in between. We'll go wherever you want us to go, and we'll do what you set up for us. Now, the host committees kind of evolve. It starts with the planning committee. And what the planning committee's first role is to say, okay, we have 10 cities, let's say. Let's find an initial host for each one of those cities. Now, you're probably not going to have local people in each one of those cities right from the start. That's the whole point of the tour, right, is to find those folks. So really, you're going to start with existing CCL volunteers. You're going to start with high performers, maybe some new volunteers that you want to empower and get into a role. The good news is they can be located anywhere. Their role then as the initial host committee is to find locals to supplement that planning team. So really the first thing they're going to want to do is try to find a local resident or local organization that's going to partner with them to set up that day of the tour. A local is obviously best because they're going to know the area, they're going to be able to fill seats at the presentation. They are also the best prospect for a future group leader or might know somebody who would make a good group leader. And this whole planning process really becomes as much about setting up that day as it does about nurturing that volunteer into a potential group leader role. Now the question becomes, okay, how do you find those local folks to step into that position? Option one is what I'll call phone a friend. This is engaging people who have already expressed interest in CCL. Now we have Salesforce, which is our membership database, and we have Volunteer Match, which is a subscription service that helps us find new volunteers. If you ask your regional coordinator, they'll be able to pull information from that to find folks along the way and get you their contact information, to give them a phone call, send them an email. For each one of those prospects, you want to identify which tour stop is closest to them, and then get the host committee for that tour stop to begin calling and emailing those folks to see if we can empower them and engage them. Now, if that fails, or even just to supplement that, even if that doesn't necessarily fail, you want to have option two, which I'll call find a friend. This is basically cold calling. And this is kind of reaching out to the usual suspects. Churches that like to focus on climate, a college professor that has a conservation club, an outdoor sportsman's group, an environmental conservation club, civic association, Facebook and meetup groups. You can find a lot of these clubs through there. You can search the local newspaper to see if there's a letter to the editor published by somebody, and maybe somebody who you think would be a good prospect. Maybe you're able to find that person through LinkedIn or Facebook and send them a message. And if worse comes to worse, you can just Google the town name and climate change and see what comes up. So for example, Phoenix, climate change, and see what pops up, and you might find somebody. All of those techniques have worked in some case or another, which is why they're all on that list. So you might be tempted to say, boy, we're going through a lot of work to find somebody. What about we just throw the bait out there and schedule an event at the library and advertise it in the newspaper to see who shows up? Well, because the reality is nobody's going to show up. We've tried that too. It just doesn't work. People don't look in the newspaper. Really, they need, the best way to get people out is if they're part of an organization that's sponsoring the event or hosting the event, and or if a person, you know, a friend or relative invites them directly to the event. So that's really the importance of engaging those local groups. And also, if we do this approach, we kind of miss the opportunity to nurture a local host, as we talked about before. Okay, so now you've got your planning team, you've got your host committees. Now you have to organize everybody. So how do you organize everybody? For a smaller tour, I would say weekly calls where you have all parties on the same call, that's probably okay. For a bigger tour, you're probably going to want to break out your planning committee calls from your host committee calls. And you're going to want to have your host committee calls a couple of times a week. So if you have, you know, 15 or 20 cities, you're probably going to want to offer that call at maybe two or even three times a week so that the various teams can jump onto whichever call works best for them. Now, here's the planning website for this step. Again, we talk about, we kind of give a call script and an email template people can use to reach out to those potential volunteers. We give some description of who these folks are and how we found them. And again, this is really all for your host committees to come on here and have all the tools they need at their fingertips on this planning website. Okay, so step two, which is scheduling the event, and step one and step two are kind of two sides of the same coin. If you're reaching out to somebody, you're both asking them to schedule the event. You're also kind of feeling them out to see if they might be a good group leader, a local volunteer. So these two kind of go hand in hand. I want to spend a minute presenting one of the tools that we're offering, which is a scheduling tool. The recommendation that I would have is to keep all of your to keep things organized, keep all of your event planning in one spot. One way to do that that I found very effective is Google Sheets, which is like Google's spreadsheet program. And it's online, so everybody can share it. There's a template we have available. Some of you may have used this and at different times. So this Google Sheet template has some bells and whistles in it. The key thing about it is that it keeps all planning in one spot, but it also allows for two key things. So you can set up different views of this sheet. So your planning committee can come in and see everything going on. They can see every stop on the tour. They can see how things are progressing, see where which cities need help and which cities are moving along okay. While at the same time, each host committee, so they're only concerned about one city, they can come in and look up their city. So in this example, we're talking about Beaumont, Texas. So we have a link and people can come in for Beaumont, Texas and just see their stuff without seeing everything else. So with Google Sheets, it has that capability and it's built into this tool. The other benefits of centralizing it all is it can handle both presentations and endorser meetings. So you get every event in here. It also allows for easy export to your personal calendar. So ahead of the tour, you might want to export all the events to your personal calendar so they show up on your phone. That's what we did for both tours. It really helped a lot. In addition, you're going to be making a lot of, your teams will be making a lot of contacts during the planning phase. And so we want to be able to export those names to the outreach database after the fact so we can keep track of those folks. And finally, you want to keep track of the field reporting, presentations and endorser meetings. And you can do that with this tool as well. So this tool is available to you to use if you'd like, or you can develop your own thing. That's fine too. It's just offered if you're interested. Scheduling priorities. So we spent a lot of time talking about the public presentation so far. That really is kind of a galvanizing event. In addition, don't forget that you do want to set up endorser meetings during the day. I call them second priority only from the standpoint of a public presentation is going to take more lead time to set up and identify and advertise and everything else. Endorser meetings can go pretty quick. And also, if you end up finding a local person to lead, they're really the best person to figure out who in their community they really want to outreach to, so you can kind of help them with that process. Okay, in terms of scheduling the events, again, this is the planning website. A couple of the key things that I make sure to put on this page are the tour flyer, so that as people are reaching out to churches and other groups to try to get the event set up, we can share the tour flyer, kind of explains what the tour is all about. We also put speaker bios up so they can see who's going to be speaking. And also a sample presentation if they want to see the presentation we're going to present. Okay, step three is promotion. How do we promote the event once we get it scheduled? The first thing is looking at the tour overall. You may want an overall landing page for the entire tour online somewhere. CCL has hosted this on its website for the Southern Tour and the Texas Tour. We contacted Ricky Bradley, our IT lead. Also the Alaska Tour used this page or a page like it. And basically on this site, we talk about the tour. We have some information again about the speakers. And we also have links to every individual event, every city. So every city, what we did was we actually set up a unique Facebook event page in each city, and we linked them from this general promotion site so that people could say, oh, this looks interesting. Are you coming to a town near me? Yes, click that, and you can go to the Facebook page. Now, how about promoting the specific events in each city? Again, the Facebook page became kind of the official invitation tool that we had. This was also good because if you're partnering with a church or partnering with a civic club, they probably have a Facebook page too, and they can be a co-host, and then they can share it with their membership. So that really helps to promote the event. We also provide a media and promotional package to our host committee team so that they can just download it, customize it, and be good to go. That included, in our case, we put a media advisory in there. We put some logos, speaker biographies, a tour map, brief summaries for a newsletter. So if the church is going to be your partner and they have a weekly bulletin, they can just copy paste this, dump it into the weekly bulletin, and it's good to go. Public service announcements if you want to get on the radio. So again, this part of the website, again, this is your planning website. And this part, we have that whole downloadable promotional package. And then we also put links to all those Facebook event pages set up. And once you identify your local team, you can add that person as the co-host or the co-administrator for that event so that they can edit the event and promote it as they see fit. Okay, step four, execution. You've got your whole tour set up. You're ready to hit the road. Give some thought to, you got to think about this in the planning stage too, because when you schedule it, what pace do you want to keep on the tour? If you average a city a day, you're going to save money, but it's a rigorous schedule. If you're doing 5 or 6 cities, that's probably okay. If you're doing 25 cities, you might want to schedule some breaks along the way. You might think about cycling some volunteers into and out of the tour. We had a lot of people, as I said, Larry Kramer, who's on the call tonight, he joined for about a week of the tour in West Texas. And then add occasional breaks in the schedule to give people some time to rest. If you average less than one city per day, you're going to have more time on the road. That's obviously going to cost a little more money, but it also gives more time to relax and recharge. So give that some thought as you're scheduling the tour. Also, as I mentioned earlier, your calendar. We actually set up a shared Google calendar where everybody on the tour could put that calendar on their phone. And we exported all the events into that calendar, so it showed up on everybody's phone. So, you know, as you're driving around town and you need directions, whoever your co-pilot is sitting there can say, look it up and get all the information at their fingertips. That was really helpful to have that shared calendar. Also, think about your presentation. Who's your messenger? Who's actually your presenter? Make sure it's somebody who's going to bring energy and enthusiasm, set the positive tone that we like to set with CCL. Somebody who embodies the region. So, you know, somebody who has maybe some link to the region or can relate to folks. And somebody who's good about kind of adding locally relevant commentary. One of the things I like about endorser meetings during the day is it allows us to incorporate stuff that we learn about the town into the talk, just as little side stories. Also, what's the message? I suggest using a CCL intro presentation. That's a really good presentation. Just customize it for the region. But that's a really effective message. And think about getting some social events in before and after the fact. Follow-up. You definitely want to think about follow-up before you hit the road. Have a follow-up plan. You want to be able to phone call and email everybody who goes to your events within a few days. So the question is, who does the follow-up? The road team is going to be too busy probably to do that. So really what you want to have is a follow-up team in place, or at least a lead, a single person, that's not on the tour that can help do that follow-up for you. Now, follow-up's going to vary, right? In a city with an active or potential group leader, really you want the group leader to do the follow-up, and the team is really there. The follow-up team is just there to support the group leader and to keep them accountable to make sure they do that follow-up. If it's a city without a group leader, then that follow-up team is going to conduct the follow-up themselves, do the emails and the calls. Ellie Sparks, who's amazing at this kind of thing, she was our follow-up lead, and she did a great job. Also, the road team, if you're going to have a follow-up team separate, the road team is going to be able to need to communicate with that follow-up team to tell them about each event. So again, if you use the Google Sheet template that we laid out, it has a section for event reports. And that includes a link to the roster. So you want to take a picture of the roster, maybe put it on Google Drive, put a link to it. or email it or whatever, but you want to get that roster over to the follow-up team. So you want to, so this, the way this is set up is it has a link to the roster link, picture. It has, you can list about what the attendance, approximate attendance was, a description of the event, any good leads. If there was a really good lead that you found, and you want to make sure that the team really focuses on this person, put that in there, and any other requests for the team. So that we built that into the tool. Also, think about celebrating successes along the way. If you run into a really great potential group leader or volunteer, empower them somehow. Get their story out there. Make sure to share it with folks. So you want to get, you want to maybe let it celebrate what happened in their story or in their city, or tell their story on the CCL blog, maybe a monthly newsletter, the monthly call. You know, send a note to Mark and let him know about it. He might want to highlight some things happening on your tour. All right, the last and final thing, and then we'll get into some of the storytelling, is create a budget. So there's obviously a lot of aspects of these things cost money, lodging, meals, transportation, et cetera. Keep some contingency in there. We had a few blown tires on our tour and some unexpected venue costs. Do it on the cheap if you can. Stay in budget hotels or stay with locals if you can. Think about how many people are joining the tour. Obviously, you do want to get people in and out of the tour, but that does cost money, so keep that in mind. And also set the expectation that we're seeking free venues. That shouldn't be a problem to find. And just to give an estimate, in my experience, between the three tours I've done, we've averaged anywhere between 150 to 300 a day, depending on the size of the tour, the distances being covered. And finally, I don't want to promise anything, no guarantees, but CCL will support some tours if they view them as strategically important. They might subsidize or cover the cost, so talk to your regional coordinator about that. All right, so I've given you the toolkit. Here's a link to a bunch of files, a lot of the stuff I shared if you want to download templates. But now let's see it in action. Let's do some storytelling and hear from some of the others on the tour. I'm sure you're tired of hearing from me. A lot of these tours have happened around the country in all these places. I know that George is on, who was on the Alaska tour, as well as some of our speakers from the other places. A lot of good examples out there, California, Alaska, the Water, Wind, and Fire tour. So with that, we're going to go to Colorado, and Susan's going to tell us what they're doing there. So I'll hand it over.
Great, thank you. With the Colorado tour, we're expanding our efforts to grow CCL in Colorado, not just in the metro areas, but in the rural areas as well. And what drives us is Colorado's climate change, more rapid snowmelt, fires, and droughts. And because we understand that carbon fee and dividend is going to help the Colorado economy thrive because it builds on our strong renewable energy industry. So we are in the middle of our planning tour right now, or we're in the middle of planning our tour right now, and we're focused on 6 to 8 towns on the rural eastern plains of Colorado. So what have we learned? I have a list to share that identifies steps in the outreach toolkit that Peter has just covered tonight that we followed and that we feel has made for a successful planning phase of our tour and undoubtedly will make for a successful execution phase 6 weeks from now. So we began our work together with a robust conversation on our vision. That's number one. We nailed down our vision. Well, first, we put a planning team together. We put out an invitation across the state asking any and all volunteers to join our planning team, and we ended up with an 8-person team. So back to the vision. Our vision is to increase CCL voices across the state. Second, we selected a name, Colorado Energy Freedom Tour. We like the fact that that's replicated in a number of locations across the country. And ultimately, we decided that that really represents a viewpoint from the rural plains of Colorado. Third, we adapted the central planning tour tools, and they are awesome. They work well. We have a database administrator that's helped us with that. Next, we identified local hosts. So we use a local host model of tours. Again, it's an important approach we highly recommend. And now we're at the phase of starting to advertise the heck out of each of our scheduled public presentations. So in terms of how we've diverged from what you saw tonight previously, we chose to have a larger planning team than perhaps other tours have had. And we did this to create depth, give diversity to our decision-making, and to have more planning team members to be mentors for local hosts. Second, we gave ourselves slightly more than 4 months lead time, which is generous, but we've needed it. Third, the local host chose the dates for the public presentations. That has pros and cons that I could get into at some other time if you want to ask me further about that. Fourth, we honored our differences. And to explain that, I'm going to read to you something from one of the planning team members. Trevor said, "Don't judge yourself by the Southern and Texas tours. They're a great example of a bunch of things to do right, but they were working with a dozen congressional districts, and Colorado is working with one. It's easy to find folks in a 100,000 person city. It takes more work in a sparse area like the Eastern Plains of Colorado." So to finish up, I have a few hard-won insights to share. First one is to ramp up your managerial efforts in support of your team when they are doing one of the early stages of calling prospects to identify local hosts. So the calling a friend and calling organizations to find local hosts, I cannot underscore that enough. None of us tend to feel particularly competent at cold calling, so ramp it up. Find a way to do it yourself or to set call-a-thons, somehow to make that happen and get those local hosts, because they're key, at least in Colorado, to a successful tour. Second, you have allies, conservative, independent, liberal allies out there. Go out and find those groups and network with them. The YC4ER group, if you don't know who those are the Young Conservatives for Energy Reform. Indivisible, particularly in 2017, because they've mapped a number of the congressional districts very closely, and you can borrow that information from them. If you're in an agricultural area, certainly using your local extension offices or other agricultural or water-focused organizations, and that they're particularly helpful in finding prospects for local hosts. Final hard one. Insight is to pick the low-hanging fruit. We have a CCL board of directors member that lives locally, and she says it's all about the numbers. Get the numbers. Pick the low-hanging fruit, and then in terms of the confidence of your planning team, that gives you also an opportunity to reach out to friendly audiences, and those friendly audiences will reach across the aisle to their neighbors and bring in people who perhaps are not quite as friendly to our message. And through that process, you're going to build yourself a really successful tour, just like we think we're in the process of doing. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Susan. So that was great. I really appreciate how you showed how you kind of adapted the tour to a smaller state with different circumstances, and that's entirely the intent. Another good example of that would be the Kentucky tour. We're going to go to Don, who completed that recently. Go ahead, Don.
Awesome. Thanks, Peter. So with the Kentucky tour, we wanted to target all six congressional districts in Kentucky. We chose Kentucky for a couple of reasons. We didn't have a strong CCL presence in Kentucky. And of course, Kentucky is very important for us from a strategic point of view with Mitch McConnell being the senior senator in that state. So, and also Kentucky is rural, it's conservative, it's coal country. It's the state that we would anticipate being a real challenge for us, especially given the fact that we need it in order to move legislation forward through the Senate. So we really saw Kentucky as an opportunity to get out there, talk with folks, and see what we could do in building our relationships with communities throughout Kentucky. Can we do the next slide? Sweet. Awesome. Thank you. So where did we present? Well, we presented in Covington, Lexington, Louisville, and Bowling Green. So that covered Kentucky 2, Congressional District 2, 3, 4, and 6. So what about Kentucky 1 and 5? So the way the districts are drawn in Kentucky is District 1 is in the far western part of the state, and District 5 is in the eastern part of the state. These are very rural areas, so they're both very mountainous, and there are no large cities in this. In the 5th District of Kentucky, which is on the western side of the Appalachian Mountains, the largest city in that district is a town called Middlesboro, with a population of just under 10,000 people. So getting to these more rural districts was a lot more challenging for us. So as we were planning our tour and reaching out to these different districts, we focused on the areas where we had success and where we were able to reach out to multiple different organizations. As Peter alluded to, you know, take the advantage, and what Susan mentioned as well, focus on the organizations where you know you've got a chance for a friendly message, where you've got an organization that would be interested in hearing about CCL's work. And you're going to find more success in those areas with higher populations for the most part. Now, it doesn't mean that we didn't try in the first and the fifth. We absolutely did. But don't let what I want your takeaway to be is don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Just because we weren't able to get those presentations in the first or fifth didn't take away from the good presentations that we were able to do in those four towns. Next slide, please. All right. So Kentucky is climate denying coal country, right? Well, I'm going to borrow LA Sparks' move over misconception. What was really interesting to me is as I was traveling around Kentucky, really found that, of course, the folks who were coming to our presentations were concerned about climate change. So a pretty self-selecting group. But the conversations I had outside of that, in hotel lobbies, on my trips, on the tours I did, you know, it really gave me an opportunity to talk with folks that, you know, who are just regular Kentuckians. And I had an opportunity to speak with Trump voters and with McConnell voters. The interesting thing was every single voter I talked to, every single person I talked to about climate change and about our carbon fee and dividend, everyone agreed that climate change was an issue, Congress needed to do something about it. And after I explained our proposal, even Trump and McConnell voters were really excited. So it really and supported our fee and dividend policy. So it's really one of those things where it's important to kind of set your expectations and your preconceptions aside, because you never know where your next group leader is going to come from. You never know where your next volunteer is going to come from. So go in with an open mind and be willing to talk to everybody. Because the more we're talking about CCL, especially on these tours where we're specifically targeting areas that don't know about carbon fee and dividend, that don't know about CCL, you know, let's get the word out there. So, and I found that in where I thought would be one of the most conservative areas, there actually was a lot of appetite for action on climate change, which was really, really, really cool to find out. Next slide. All right. So what were the takeaways from the Kentucky tour? You don't want to overstretch yourself. This was a short tour, especially compared to the work that Peter did and the Alaska tour. It was 6 days, hit four different cities. But even over those 6 days, when you're traveling hundreds of miles every day, and then, you know, getting to your hotel room or a volunteer's house, and then, you know, get ready for your presentation, go out and give your presentation. Usually these are going to go maybe an hour and a half to 2.5 hours. You know, you're getting back home, getting back to your bed at maybe 10, 11 o'clock at night, and up the next morning and putting more miles behind you. Just be aware of that when you're doing your planning, and don't overstretch yourself. Don't try and do everything yourself. Definitely utilize the other volunteers in your area. If you've got somebody else who would like to do a co-presentation with you one night, take advantage of that. So just keep that in mind. The other is keep an open mind. As I mentioned, you never know where your next great volunteer is going to come from. You never know where your next group leader is going to come from. So keep that misconception on check. And finally, as I mentioned, talk to everybody. There's tremendous appetite across this country for action on climate change. And the more I talk with folks in more areas, the more I find that individuals are really concerned about this. I think the overall days of straight denial are coming to an end, and folks are looking for an opportunity to move forward. And again, it comes down to pairing a solution that matches the problem, and that's exactly what we've got. So feel confident in your message, feel confident in our policy, and I think you'll find that you get a really, really solid response from everyone you talk to.
Great, thanks, Don. We're let's go out east to South Georgia.
Okie doke. Thank you, Peter. The Georgia tour started in part because we wanted to get out of Atlanta and because of the Texas Energy Freedom Tour. So we called ours the Georgia Energy Freedom Tour in homage. And Vernon Dixon was our group leader who began cold calling. He says phone worked much better than email. Vernon is an older gentleman who doesn't use social media, so he didn't use it. What he found worked best were university groups or the environmental groups. And he liked local progressive churches, progressive groups, the Democratic Party. There aren't a lot of Unitarian Universalist churches in South Georgia. And then he also tried some local civic clubs as well as mayors and city councils, and he found those people didn't respond to him at all. So, but that's where he went first. Next slide. Yeah, and this is us. I'm on the left side. Vernon's the other guy in the blue shirt with the brown tie. And then in the, between us is Terry Schiff, wonderful volunteer. And then Dale Stratford went with us. And then she dared to move out of town up to Asheville. So that was a bummer for us. But the tour is planned, as you know, or as you can tell, we're mostly in Atlanta. And there's cities that are a couple of hours drive from Atlanta that are relatively easy to get to. And we said, let's go places that are tougher to get to. Vernon had lived in Albany, so we went down there, then over to Tifton and Valdosta. We actually split up as two groups of two to make presentations, and then we went all the way to Savannah to speak and back to Atlanta. And we had somewhat mixed results. Next slide. Yeah. In Albany, it's the picture on the right. Five people showed up. It did include one city council member. We were very happy with that. But all in all, it was a disappointing crowd to get started with. Another person attending was a minister. So, and it was especially disappointing because Albany is where Vernon used to live for 20 years. So only one person came out and talked to him. Then we went to Tifton and Valdosta. And we drew good crowds in both locations. In Tifton, we connected with the local environmentalist, and in Valdosta State, Vernon reached an environmental studies professor. So that worked well. And then we drove to Savannah the next night. We didn't get as many people. It was a poor location, far from downtown. So that was certainly disappointing to us. Next slide. Our lessons. Our presentation did have material from other organizations. And I think we might have done better if we just stuck with CCL's message. But that's what it went. We did not pre-schedule meetings with farm bureaus or other groups. One thing that we did that we really enjoyed doing was we would, you know, we got constituent comment cards filled out in Tifton and Valdosta, and we went to the congressional office in Tifton and dropped them off, and likewise in Savannah the next day. So the congressman got direct feedback, and what else we did that it's not in your words, but there were a couple of issues going on with a pipeline through South Georgia. And of course, sea level rise when we were in Savannah. And so we did what we could to reference those as we talked. So what we probably would do more of if we were to do it again is more follow-up, just to make sure that we're doing more follow-up, because I think that's, we didn't plan the follow-up and that would have helped us a lot. Okay. Back to you, Peter. Oh, and there we are at the end of the tour. Woo! That was a lot of fun.
Great. Well, thanks, Henry. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. Our experience varied a lot. One night we would have 40 and the next night three would show up. So, especially on the Texas tour where we didn't do as good engaging those local people right from the start. So, but that's great. And, you know, you never know. You plant seeds in certain places and a year later, maybe one of those folks will pop back up and start a chapter. So, that's great. All right. Let's finish up with Bill. We're going to go out west. Bill Barron.
Thanks. Yeah. Hear on what you said there. You know, you never know what'll happen down the road. So I think any effort's well worth it. I'm going to talk about our Wild West tours. And the idea for this style of tour initially came from concentrating outreach opportunities around a climate advocate training. So when I'd be out in the field and our region is so large that I'd try to incorporate other events around the training, just like Peter talked about on his tour. So the idea with these tours that I took on were to try to be sort of a little smaller in scale and to create a way to immerse new volunteers into various forms of action and support them throughout the process. Can you go to the next slide, Peter? The Wild West tours were geared around this approach, developing opportunities for new groups and for existing chapters. Our time frame is typically 3 to 4 days. And the unique thing to what we were trying to do was to try to set something up that could be organized with limited effort, kind of seen more as a tactical form of outreach to volunteers, new volunteers, as well as chapters that could use maybe a boost or an opportunity to reach an area that hadn't been contacted yet. So in reality, you only need to have a tour captain and an outreach team to really initiate. So the tour captain would then delegate to other volunteers and chapters that you're wanting to work with to initiate outreach opportunities. What this did was it created a great opportunity for new and growing chapters to get experience in advocacy. It was a way to energize volunteers by taking being in action as a team and deepening relationships with each other as volunteers and developing synergies within CCL and the community. How did we do it? The way we did it was I would reach out to a state coordinator and ask them what we thought would be the best target area to approach a place in the region that we really wanted to give a boost or create opportunities for new volunteers. And then we just determined a date of availability. And the way we really made it happen was we would tie it to a major event like a climate advocate training so that there was one established event that really was sort of the foundation of the tour and then seek multiple opportunities around that event, kind of fill the schedule as much as possible and look at this tour as sort of 2 to 3 days of building political will. At times, we use the regional coordinator with the state coordinator draw, kind of meaning that, you know, we would promote that the regional coordinator with the state coordinator from CCL would be in town, and that kind of sometimes helped us get more people to engage and join our public presentations. That could be carried towards highlighting somebody from CCL who happens to be coming into your town that could maybe be a motivator to get some events and opportunities used in your chapter. So I wanted to share with you that, you know, these were all kind of targeted attempts I wouldn't say attempts. I think they were all really successful in trying to get more energy flowing in different areas. And it was always the case where every time we debated whether we should go for it or not, because we were on the fence, if there was enough events or not, once we decided to go for it, things just really fell into place. And I felt like it was really an amazing experience every time. Each tour we came up with names to remind us that this could be fun. So our first tour was the Freedom Tour with a high five. Our second tour was the Phoenix Sizzle Tour, and finally the Montana Stampede was our latest. And so the idea was to try to have a little fun and get people engaged and working together. Key points to hit on: identify a location of focus and a point person, build around an existing event, explore untapped outreach opportunities, radio, TV interviews, meetings with community leaders, seek a resolution, lead a CCL introduction or do a climate advocate training, editorial board, city council member meetings, mayoral meetings, environmental groups. From there, build relationships and ignite inspiration through your volunteers. And really, very importantly, at the end, maximize your input impact through follow-up. And that's something that you want to delegate so that you aren't held holding the bag, just like Peter said. My three main takeaways are sort of the field of dreams. If you make it, if you, what's the saying? If you believe it, it'll happen. That's not, I haven't watched the show in a long time, but you know what I'm getting at. It's quick and focused. And I think more than anything, people who participated in it walked away realizing that it is doable to do concentrated efforts and to really get people motivated in a specific area. Thank you.
Is first off, just give a huge round of applause for all of the work that all four of our presenters and Peter did on just really laying out the different processes that each of these tour paths can place. Thank you all for making time tonight to obviously share your story. I think that we're all leaving a lot more inspired and motivated.